Hi, I'm Carr Wilson, Doctor of Behavioral Health, and I want to welcome you to Covenant Behavioral Health, started in 2011. We've been an industry leader in the mental health field, servicing active duty personnel, veterans, and their families. Our practice started in St. Louis, Missouri, and has expanded with offices in Iowa and California. Covenant Behavioral Health is a registered 501c3 agency, and we're committed to servicing active duty, military personnel, their dependents, and the local community at large through education and therapeutic services. We blend professional psychotherapy and psychoeducation material in an integrated healthcare setting to assist with relationships, healing wounds of the past, and enhancing our patients' quality of life. Here at Covenant Behavioral Health, we are committed to the preservation of families and relationships. Using practical, interactive, and solution-focused approach, we provide support and practical feedback to help our patients resolve current problems and change long-standing behavior patterns. Hi, I'm Dr. Carr Wilson with Covenant Behavioral Health, and thank you for joining me on today's episode. I want to talk a little bit today about the process of forgiveness. And our topic is actually titled, How to Forgive and Forget. How to Forgive and Forget. Forgiveness itself is a process. It is a systematic process which takes time to actually achieve the optimal effectiveness of forgiveness. And so what I mean by that is it's not something that's done one time and then it's over with, but it is actually a process. It implies a continual process. As a matter of fact, it is a clear and deliberate action from the forgiver. Rational minds will contemplate if they deserve the wrong that they have endured. They will retrace their steps repeatedly, trying to identify where they made a mistake and how they allowed themselves to become a victim of such an offense. The process of forgiveness is a four-step process. And we'll talk a little bit about it in terms of hurt, shame, guilt, or betrayal. But lots of other adjectives can be used also when we talk about the process of forgiving and forgetting. So number one, you have to process the offense. And this is where you'll write down the story and determine if you want to forgive and forget. In this step, you should process what has happened to you by coming to terms that you cannot change the past. You can only change how you allow it to affect you. In other words, your response to the hurt, the wound, the injury is the only thing that you can control. You can't control what has happened. You can't control people, places, things, or events. Again, the only thing that you can control is your response to them. And so in this particular step of processing it, we ask that you write down on in a journal or a piece of paper, and you write down the offense, the hurt, the injury. You write it down. You read it. You think about it. You read it aloud for your ears to hear it and your heart and your mind to process it. And then I suggest that you wait 24 to 48 hours before returning to repeat that process. And here's how you can tell if you're actually ready to forgive and forget. If you feel better after doing this process, the intensity of the hurt, the pain, the guilt, the betrayal, the shame, the loss, the injury has lessened. And if you feel better about it at this particular time and you're ready to say, okay, I'm ready to forgive, I'm ready to forget, I'm ready to move on, then you can continue to the second step. But if not, then you need to go back to the first step and continue to process it. So maybe you can process this alone if you can. You can process it with a spiritual leader, a pastor, another faith member that you can that you trust in. Or maybe you need to process it with a professional counselor or something of that nature. But you do need to process it is what you need to do. And if you have processed it, then you're ready to move to step two. And step two is to choose to forgive and or forget. In this step, you need to forgive yourself first and always. If you're having difficulty with forgiving yourself, then I recommend that you go back to step one, rewrite your story the way you want it to end, and process it again. This can take several days or several chances of several times of doing this before you actually come to the point to where you're ready to forgive yourself. What will happen is that people will often punish themselves when they have been victims of others' hurt and betrayal. And so what they'll do is they'll question within themselves, like, how did they allow themselves to become a victim and what did they do wrong? Rational minds will contemplate if they deserve the wrong that they've endured. They will retrace their steps repeatedly, trying to identify where they made the mistakes and allow themselves to become the victim of the offense. And so that's why it's important that you choose first off to forgive yourself. Forgiveness is a gift that you get to give yourself. And once you've been able to forgive yourself, then we move on to the perpetrator. This is the one who has caused the injury, and you want to try to forgive them if you can forgive them. I don't like to pressure people to forgive people who have hurt them. Of course, we are admonished in the Bible that we have to forgive, that we should forgive, and that forgiveness is a good thing. And while I do believe in everything that I just stated, I do believe we have to also be careful with forcing people to forgive those that have hurt them too early in this process. And so when you're ready to forgive, then you forgive. If you're not ready to forgive, then I'm going to tell you that that's okay. You don't have to forgive because you're not ready to forgive. When you say that I have forgiven you and you still carry that hurt, that pain, that shame, that guilt, that betrayal, that loss around with you, all you're doing is offering lip service. And so it's simply just not the time for you to do that. You never want to tell, for example, a rape victim, you need to forgive your rapist. That's nonsense. We would never tell a rape victim to forgive their rapist. We would focus on restoring and healing that individual first, and allowing them to come to terms and working through their healing. And then when they're ready to forgive, then they're ready to forgive. And so that's how you want to work this forgiveness. You want to make sure that you've forgiven yourself first, and then and only then are you ready to move toward forgiving the perpetrator at that particular time. Now, this is a huge step, and you should not feel pressure to do it, but forgiveness always begins with us, and once we can accept our own forgiveness, only then are we ready to forgive the other person. And if you've processed through this and now you've decided that you want to forgive yourself and you're able to forgive the other person, or maybe you're just only able to forgive yourself at this particular point, that's fine too. Now you're ready to move to step three. And in step three, we talk about how to forget. And forgetting is sort of a play on words because it's very difficult for us to forgive just the way that our brains are designed. But I want you to look at this. So when we say let's forget it, this is almost an impossible task to accomplish because of the way our brains are created. Our brains experience what is called a flashbulb memory when we experience a trauma or a traumatic event This can include deep hurt, betrayal, loss, shame, guilt. The flashbulb memory is etched into the recesses of our mind. And much like a video player, it will replay the traumatic event over and over and over again. And telling yourself not to think about it just simply doesn't work. And trying to forget about it doesn't happen without hard work. Once you've processed it by talking about it and writing it down and revisiting it a few days later, you're ready to forgive and or forget. This happens by being intentional about forgetting. When your mind is triggered by the thoughts and sight, sound, smell, taste, or events will re-trigger that thought in your short-term memory, you must tell yourself that you distinctly remember forgetting that hurt, that shame, or that guilt. You need to say it out loud so that your ears will hear it, and then your heart and your mind will process it. This is called cognitive behavior therapy, or CBT. We are actually challenging and trying to retrain our brain. It's what we're doing with this process. And so remember that if you say it often and long enough, that your mind will start to believe it. For example, if you tell a child that they're stupid and that they're dumb enough, the child will start to believe that they're stupid and they're dumb. If you tell a child that they're beautiful and they're smart, they will start to believe that they're beautiful and they're smart. So there is power in our words, and our words have the ability to create life or to destroy life. And so when we say something, we say it out loud. We don't say it in our heart or say it in our mind or repeat it in our thoughts. But when we say it out of our mouths so that our ears will hear it and our hearts and our minds will process it, it's cognitive restructuring. We are retraining our brains how to think about something. And so remember that if you say it often and long enough, that your mind will start to believe it. This is the process of forgetting something. And remember what I said earlier, you don't actually forget. Just the way our brains, God has designed our brains. Our brains, they're like computers, and it's nearly impossible to just forget something unless you have some kind of organic disorder, brain disorder. But otherwise, it's not that you forget, you just forget where you stored it. So you have what's called your long-term memory and your short-term memory. And in your long-term memory, that's where you store most of the things that happen to you. And oftentimes, we just forget where we stored them. Just imagine thousands and thousands of rows of file cabinets, and you've got to go through all those file cabinets to try to remember where you've stored that memory. It's there, you just can't easily recall it. And so then there is our short-term memory, where we can easily recall things. Things are brought up by sight, typically by sight, sound, smell, taste, or event. Something will happen and it will trigger us, and before you know it, we're back there remembering or experiencing that hurt again. So now, once you've done this, you've moved from processing it to choosing to forgive or forget. And now you have chosen to forget it. You want to go to step four. And step four is what we call letting it go. And letting it go is really a process all on its own. What you'll find is that this is where you'll decide to put the issue behind you and to live in the present moment. You see, when we live in the past, we create a cycle of depression. Our brains will replay those thoughts over and over again. We'll relive, we'll have dreams about that pain. And it's actually, we're reaching into the past and we're holding on to that while we're trying to move forward, which is difficult to do. You can't move forward if you're still holding on to the past. And so here's where you have to decide to let it go. The goal of letting it go is to live in the here and the now. And you must choose to acknowledge what you can control and what you can't control. You must choose to acknowledge who you can control and who you cannot control. You cannot control people, places, things, or events, but you can control how you respond to them. And once you accept who and what you can and cannot control, you will experience this serenity. You will experience this peace. And actually, it's a state of mind, self-actualization. You understand exactly who you are, where you are, what your purpose is, and how to move forward on this journey or in this journey called life when you experience this. You don't let what you can't control bother you so much. It doesn't paralyze you. It doesn't hinder you. You experience it, but you keep moving forward all in the same process. And so letting it go is very, very important. And if you are at the stage of letting it go, here's where you want to take a piece of paper again, and you want to, from step one, you want to process it, talk about it. Like I said, even with a licensed professional or maybe a pastoral staff member, you can process it with the person who has caused the injury, but only if it's safe to do that. If this person is no longer available, and you can try practicing it with an empty chair, maybe visit a grave site and process it, whatever you need to do, if you can, and only if it's safe, do I suggest that you go to the actual person and do this. We don't always have the luxury of doing that. Sometimes these people have passed on, they're longer in our life, and it's not safe for us to do that. And this is where we use the empty chair. This is where we use the grave site to actually do this. This is where we use our professional. We sort of see them as that person, and we do it with them in a safe and secure environment. But once you've talked about it and you got it out, you take this piece of paper and now you burn it. And one of the things I like to do is I like to get a coffee can or maybe a gas grill or something of that nature and take that piece of paper where I've written down that hurt. We've written down that hurt. And we put some lighter fluid on it or maybe put it in the sink and set it on fire and watch it turn into ashes, watch it disintegrate, and then literally be destroyed right before our eyes. Watch as the hurt that once held you captive is destroyed and reduced to ashes. I'm sorry. And again, when your mind tries to bring up this wound, this grievance, or this sore point, you can remind it by saying aloud that you cannot go to the four corners of the earth and collect the ashes and put the ashes back together again. In other words, when the pain has been destroyed, you have symbolically and metaphorically destroy that pain by burning that piece of paper and watching it turn to ashes. It goes to the four corners of the wind. It's flushed down the toilet. It's flushed down this. It's drained down the sink. And so you can't go and put it back together again and reread it and take on that pain again. So this is one of the ways where we actually get a chance to let it go once and for all. And I tell my patients that only if they are able to go to the four corners of the wind and get that paper and put it back together again, do they get to own that hurt, own that pain, own that shame again. If they cannot do that, then we are really at a place where we have to practice LIG, letting it go. Therefore, I want to force this issue here of letting it go, and you got to find a way that works best for you. Those are just some of the suggestions that I've come up with that I've used with patients, burning it in the sink or in a coffee can outside the building, and watching it disintegrate and turn into ashes. And then I tell the patients, now when that hurt and that pain comes back up again, you have to say to yourself out loud so that your ears will hear it and your heart and your mind can process it. that you have made a conscious decision to let that go. You are reminded that you forgave that person. You are reminded that you have forgiven yourself. You are reminding yourself that you have made a conscious decision to let it go. All right. Now, I do want to say that we don't want to force you to forgive. We don't want to force anybody to forget. We don't want to force anybody to move on and let it go. Sometimes what happens is that when a person has been hurt, wounded by someone, we hold on to that for a specific reason. We hold on to that pain, that hurt, because it does something for us. Maladaptive as it may be, we hold on to it because it gives us strength. It helps us get up. Hate is a very strong motivator. It helps you get up in the morning. It helps you be able to go and to do the things that you need to do. And so you have to be careful when you force somebody to forgive, to forget, and to let something go. And you have to really have something to replace that with when you take that hurt from them, because you can really cause that person who has been a victim to really implode. That's what you can do when you try to take that away from them and move too fast through the process of forgiving and forgetting. So I want to say thank you very much for being a part of this broadcast this week on how to forgive and forget. I'm Dr. Wilson with Covenant Behavior Health.